Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 167 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of September 15th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo, and joining me as always would be Dan, but he's not here because he's in his car driving for, let's say, a good 20 minutes. Because I don't know how else to explain it. So when he gets here, Dan and I will be joined by, but in the meantime, I myself will be joined by Mr. Patrick Hickey Jr. Say hi, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Happy to be on the show. Thank you so much for bringing me on.
Of course. Patrick here has written himself a book, and it's pretty fascinating stuff. But before we go any further, here is your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, listeners. So this is usually where I would ask Dan how he's doing, and he'd talk about Puzzle and Dragons for like 15 minutes, and my eyes would glaze over. So we're just going to skip it, because Dan's not here. Red-bearded jerk.
Night.
So down to business. Like I said earlier, we're joined tonight by author Patrick Hickey Jr. I'm saying your name right, right?
Yes, you are. It sounds like a young conservative's name, doesn't it?
I don't know what a young conservative would sound like, but let's go with yes. Let's go with a strong yes on that. His new book, The Minds Behind the Games, is hitting shelves early next year, right? It's early next year?
That's what they say on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, but my developer, you hear me? My publisher says that it should be out like in between late November and like early December. So that's what we're trying for. We're trying for Christmas.
So at some point next year, it will be on store shelves.
Yes, definitely.
We don't know how long it will have been there. And it's chock full of all manner of great interviews with folks behind classic and cult video games, to paraphrase something that he wrote about it at some point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Whatever.
I don't remember where I got that sentence from, and I wrote this earlier today. So, Patrick, why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
I am the assistant director of the journalism program at Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn, New York. I've been covering the video game industry for about, I'd say, in between 10 and 15 years, give or take.
What have you been covering it with?
NBC, Examiner, and my site, my child, ReviewFix.com. And a host of other sites that don't exist anymore. So that's what happens when you've been in the industry for a while. Sites open, close. I'm with Old School Retro Gamer Mag now. They just started a couple of weeks
ago. Oh, yeah, that. I was talking to Lenny Herman about that.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be working with Lenny. They've got Lenny Herman's writing for them. Brett Weiss, who wrote the foreword for my book. Michael Tomlinson, who at one point had the Guinness World Record largest video game collection. So it's like when they asked me to write for them, I looked at the staff page and I'm like, giggity. Like, I want to write with these guys. This is awesome. So pretty excited about where that's going. I've written a couple of articles for their site already, and we're gearing up for the first issue.
Nice. So it's an online only thing, right? It's not a physical mag?
No, it's a physical mag too. So that's the thing.
Oh, is
it? If you go on their website right now, oldschoolgamermagazine.com right now, you can actually get the first issue for free. So,
oh, snazzy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, for some reason I had it in my head it was only a digital mag, but
yeah, it's digital and print.
Well, I do like print magazines.
I
like
love
to
print
keep
magazines.
Them in my bathroom.
Yep. Nice.
And like, and I'm a dichotomy, because I'll keep them in the bathroom while I'm reading them, and then after I'm done, I'll bag and board them and put them in a box.
There you go.
So they've been in the bathroom for like a month and a half, but nah, got to take care of them after you're done.
Absolutely.
It's where all my copies of Nintendo Force are, which is, love that mag. Anyways, what else is cooking? You've written a book.
Yes. That's why I'm here, I think.
What is your book about? What is it made out of? Is it paper?
Yeah, it's paper. It's good paper. It's like paper that belongs in a library and stuff. Like,
Is it like papyrus? Does it have a great book smell?
Yes, it has a good smell to it, a good texture.
Do you physically have the like a printed copy of the book yet?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for my proofs. I should have them in a couple of weeks. There's actually like I'm sure you saw like the cover of the book that I sent you. I suggested a couple of more changes. That's actually like the third or fourth revision of the cover because I'm kind of annoying that way. I had them add more games to the book, change the colors a little bit, change the font, and then there's like a chip in the middle of the brain, and I wanted like an Atari 2600 controller in the middle instead of that chip, because I understand that like the chip is like the beginning of the video game, but most people aren't going to get that, so I figured a cool game controller would be better.
Yeah, I mean a joystick is a tad more emblematic than a chip. A chip makes it almost seem like it's about technology, whereas the controller makes it seem more like it's about games.
Exactly.
I get that.
So to answer your question, what is the book made out of? I would say it's made out of like really geeky conversations that I've been having in video game stores over the past like 20 years. Before Wikipedia, there was video game magazines. You know, I still have a ton of Game Pros in my man cave and Electronic Gaming Monthlies and Nintendo Power. And that's where I used to get all of my information, and I would have conversations with people.
We all used to get our information.
Yeah.
That was it, man. That was all there was.
Absolutely. And I feel like gamers today, especially young gamers, these goddamn millennials, they don't know anything. First off, they don't know. I'm a college professor, too, like I told you before. And I feel like if you're like 18 to 24, you're pretty stupid. That's why you're in college and I'm trying to teach you and stuff like that. And but it's like everyone uses Google and Wikipedia for everything, and yet they still don't know anything about the things that they love. And the video game industry is probably the worst, because music, you know who sings like Thriller and stuff like that, and movies, oh, it's DiCaprio, oh, it's Brando, it's this and that. But if I tell you, you know, who created NBA Jam, you'll probably know because you're awesome, but a lot of people won't. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's because I feel like a lot of that has to do with the way the games were, you know, that kind of stuff wasn't advertised back then. You know, the people that were involved in, you know, that involved in Atari and broke off to do Activision, they tossed their names out there. But even that didn't stick. You know, once post crash NES era, I mean, hell, a lot of the games, they weren't even allowed to put their proper names in the back of it. You got things like Bun Bun and whatnot.
Yes, like, and like first names and like the first letter of their last name and things like that. And it's like,
exactly, yeah,
it's insane. It's like if I made a game, I'd want everybody to know. You know?
Yeah, seriously. I'm a huge Kid Icarus fan. I love the Kid Icarus franchise. I love that character. There are no credits in Of Myths and Monsters because it was developed by Tosei, who didn't let people. But they didn't put credits in their games because they didn't want people poaching their talent. Very Atari-esque.
Yes.
I have no idea who made that game. And more particularly, I have no idea who wrote the music, because I love the music in that game.
Great music.
And I know Hip Tanaka did the first one, but I know he didn't do the second one because it's not his style. But I have no idea who did. So, and I've even reached out to Tosei with no response because, I don't know, I guess they don't know who I am or care, because why would they? I'm some dude in my basement recording a podcast. But still, I would love to know that information. And these kinds of things should be known. And I feel like a lot of modern developers are getting their names out there a lot better. But, you know, if it's outside of like big names like Shigeru Miyamoto, most of these names aren't really common knowledge. You know, like David Crane is not De Niro. It's just not that kind of a connection there.
And I mean, to us, he's De Niro, but to everybody else, I mean,
who the hell's David Crane?
Yes. And I remember there was one point in the book because he was one of the first, I sent out 6 pitches originally for the book. Cause what had happened was I had a conversation with someone that I work with, and I had this whole project that I wanted to do. I wanted to add like another class and do all these things. And they were like, listen, that's not in the forecast right now. And I'm like, I need to do something. My wife was 5 months pregnant, and to be honest, I was kind of like, I had a great life before she got pregnant in terms of like the time schedule. So like, I would get home before her, and I would straighten up the house, and I would do all of my work, and then when she would come home, I would have energy, and I'd be like, yo, let's go out to eat, let's go spend time together and stuff. And when she got pregnant, she got really tired, and she had to relax, you know?
Hello?
So when she was relaxing, I'm like, this guy at work, you know, doesn't want to do this project. My wife is exhausted. She's sleeping early. I have all this time. Why don't I do this? Why don't I write a book? And then just it popped up into my mind. I'm like, I should write a video game book. I've been covering the industry for so long. I love the industry. And I had just read Brett Weiss's top 100 console games, 1977 to 1987. Mm-hmm. So after I had bought about 25 of the games in that book, I said to myself, this book is great, but I understood that Brett's writing style was very different from mine. So Brett is a super, super geek in the best way possible. Like, he finds out information about games and does his research, and he understands how the games work and stuff. And I'm a good gamer, and I have over 2,000 games and stuff, but I'm a journalist, and I enjoy interviewing people. So I'm like, I can't write Brett Weiss's book, and I don't want to write Brett Weiss's book. And I love Leonard Herman, and he's a researcher. And I'm like, but I can't really – I don't want to do his type of book because that's been done too.
His book reads like a research book.
Yes. So I'm like, I kind of want to write something. The best thing about really good journalism is the paragraphs are shorter, they read smoother, and it feels like someone's like telling you a story. So I said to myself – I don't want to tell one huge, massive story. I'm like, I want to get anywhere from like 15 to 20 games and tell, let the developers tell their story. And I'm just going to like carve the road that they're traveling on, like handle the narrative and introduce the game and give biographical information on them and stuff, but really give them an opportunity to tell the story that they never got to or that they haven't really given in as full as detail as they possibly could have before. So once I got all of that together, I sent out like 5 or 6 pitches. I sent an email to David Crane, Gary Kitchen, Howard Scott Warshaw, Greg Johnson, the guy that did Heroes of Might and Magic, John Van Kegenheim. And I think that's it. And what happened was I said to myself, if 3 out of the 6 of these guys answer me, then I think I have enough to like at least make a pitch to a publisher. And within 2 weeks, all 6 of them got back to me. And I was like, no, like it was like an omen. It was like, holy crap. And I remember Howard Scott Warshaw was like, right after this election is over, like the infamous Hillary Trump election, he's like, as soon as this election is over, he's like, we'll catch up and like, we'll have a good phone conversation and we'll see like what's up. And that was the first interview that I did. And I didn't want to do E.T. because I felt like it had been done like 1,000 times.
Yeah, to say the least.
So I did a really good interview with him on Yars, and, what had happened was I was alluding to E.T. saying something like, you know, not a lot of people have the range that you do. Like, you could, how many people could say that they've made one of the best original games on a console and one of arguably the worst? I mean, I know E.T. isn't the worst game on the Atari 2600.
That is a fact. Yeah. E.T., I used to love that game when I was a kid. I didn't get what I was doing, but any game where you're controlling a character and you press a button and it makes a fart noise is inherently cool to kids.
But the thing is, though, too, it's like it was developed in, you know, 5.5 weeks and it's playable.
Yeah, it was extremely crazy constraints put on that thing, and it's playable. It's, I mean, and how do you think of the source material? How the hell do you make a game out of E.T.?
Yes, and I mean, he basically came up with the idea for it in 36 hours. I mean, he's the guy, for his time, was an absolute rock star. 3 games on the Atari 2600 or VCS, whatever you want to call it, and they all sold over 1 million copies. Not a lot of people have that type of track record. So you could say E.T. sucks, still sold over 1 million copies. Mm-hmm. You know? So I was alluding to E.T., and then he's like, Pat, come on, let's talk about E.T. now. And I'm like, all right. So I asked him different questions, and that chapter was basically, that chapter in the book is basically trying to dispel all the fanboys. And I have 2 nephews, one's 14 and one's 8. And I sat them down in front of my TV and I'm like, you're going to watch this documentary, the Atari Game Over documentary, because they love games and stuff. And they were like, is E.T. really like not that bad? And then I whipped out the Atari 2600 and we started playing, and they're like, all right, we could play this. I'm like, that's why I'm writing about this, because there's way too many fanboys out there that'll just jump on it and say it's the worst game. So I had the 6 developers. I got a great and different interview for E.T. I got a great interview for Yars Revenge. And then everything just started to like kind of fall into place. So then every developer after that, I kind of wanted to try and get something different from them. So like David Crane, I really wanted to talk about Pitfall, but I'm like, you know what? Again, that's been done before. And I just had this really like soft spot for A Boy and His Blob. And I knew that he worked on Night Trap. So I asked him, and he said yes. And then I asked Gary Kitchen, and they're friends. And then David Crane is sending me emails, and he's like, yeah, me and Gary Kitchen were talking about you the other day. And I'm like, oh, like I was totally geeking out, you know? And that's, I know, awesome. You get that. Some people would be like, who cares? you know?
That's freaking awesome, man.
And it just started to come together from there, and it was very organic after that. And it was just like, all right, what games, like, have really affected me as a child? Or what games have affected me as an adult that people don't know about? And that's how we got to, like, To the Moon and, like, Mushroom 11, which was developed by two married couples, you know? So it's like I wanted to tell interesting stories made in kind of, like, that retro game style. And also games that, like, people almost forgot about. Deus Ex is one of the most influential video games of all time. And I'm having a tournament right now on the Facebook page for the book where, like, people are, like, every day I'm having two games kind of face off and people are voting.
And Deus Ex lost to Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. How did that happen? And I'm messaging one of my friends and I'm like, this is the exact reason why I'm writing this book. Because, I mean, Hulk Ultimate Destruction is a lot of fun. And I would say when it was released, it was one of the best comic book based video games of like, you know, its time. But Deus Ex, man, it's a completely different and better and more influential game. And I'm like, this is why the book had to be written. So people know the impact that some of these games had. Maniac Mansion 2, it's going to win today. It's like, you know, 15 votes ahead, you know.
Oh, what's it up against? I think I missed that one.
Bart versus Space Mutants.
Oh, yeah, Maniac Mansion, hands down.
You know, absolutely. But the thing is, like, I remember, you know, the first hour that the vote was up, and I'm getting, like, DMs from people on Instagram, and they're telling me, and they're like, Bart versus Space Mutants. And part of me wants to write in caps, like, you idiot. Like, no. No.
Well, I mean, to that one, it's... Look, I'm not the hugest... I'm fascinated by Bart versus Space Mutants. I know that was the one chapter that I read, but I'm not a huge fan of that game, especially not now, but... Point-and-click adventures like Maniac Mansion, like, they may be important, but those kind of games are not for everyone, you know? So I can understand how that one's kind of a close one. Just like I can understand, like, Deus Ex is empirically, it's just objectively a better game than Hulk Ultimate Destruction. But if you're thinking just of pure nostalgia, what kind of fun did you have? I remember working in game stores at the time, and I know there wasn't, especially console gamers, weren't lining up to buy Deus Ex, whereas Hulk Ultimate Destruction was the game everyone talked about because you could be Hulk and run and jump and smash buildings and whatnot. So I get that. And that's, I agree why your book is important because it's the idea is to illustrate why these games are important.
One of the cool parts during the interview with Warren Spector, who's a super nice guy, I interviewed him about Epic Mickey 2, which is the whole series he's in love with. It's like one of the most important series he's ever worked on, if you ask him. When I was at NBC, we did that interview. So, but he's surprised, like, one of the quotes in the book is he's surprised that, like, Deus Ex even is able to run on a PlayStation 2. So, that's definitely not, it's sad that more people know that game for its release on the PS2 than the PC. It's kind of sad, because it runs a lot better on the PC.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the, you know, PS2 in particular is just such a ubiquitous piece of hardware. Everybody had one. Ridiculous. So of course you'd want your game on PS2 no matter how good or bad it runs. To kind of step back a little bit, I had a question that popped up into my head, and I obviously don't want to give up anything that's in the book, but when you're talking to, you did your interview, one of the games you talk about in your book is A Boy and His Blob, the original NES version. Did you ask those guys what they thought of the Way Forward remake of their game?
Yes, they actually said that they actually enjoyed it. They thought it had a lot of possibilities, and they thought that it served the original, like, series well.
That warms my heart, because I adored that remake. I thought it was wonderful. It has a hug button.
Yeah, absolutely. I reached out to those guys that did the remake, and they never answered me, because the thing was, for the Night Trap chapter, I mean, I interviewed, like, James O'Reilly, Rob Phillip, David Crane, and I interviewed the people that did the remaster. And for the Wonder Boy in Monsterland, I interviewed the creator, and I interviewed the two teams that were doing the remakes on the Switch and stuff like that. So I really wanted to kind of talk to those guys about why they decided to make a retro remake or whatever of Boy and His Blob, and they never got back to me. So that would have been cool. But David Crane was very happy with that remake on the Wii. So
that puts a big old smile on my face. That was one of those games that's like, that's how you do a remake right there. It was done with such love and respect for the source material. That stage, like, I guess somewhere around halfway through the game where it goes and plays the original game's music and it has the cityscape in the background. It was just wonderful. So that makes me happy to hear that the original creators dug that. That's a good time.
It's one of my favorite chapters too, because like I'm not going to get too much into it, but Boy and His Blob was developed in 6 weeks, and these guys were working 20 hours a day to finish the game, and it was like Gary Kitchen working on one side of the game and David Crane working on the other, and it was just like Paul McCartney and like John Lennon like singing together for the first time. It's just like one of the first times that two amazing developers got together to create something. And they had a lot of plans for that series to continue in various other forms, and it just never happened. And it says to me like, oh, what could have been, you know?
Yeah, seriously. It always struck me as one of those games. I could never truly get into it as a kid, and I tried a lot because I loved the mythology. Mm-hmm. I loved the idea of it.
Yeah.
But the actual gameplay itself, I was never able to do much with it, and I kept trying and failing, but it always struck me as something that had a ton of potential.
Absolutely. My first experience with it was on the Game Boy, and then I had...
Oh, was that Trouble in... No, Trouble in Blobalonia was the first one. Was it Rescue Princess?
Yes, Blobalette, or whatever. That, yeah. So then I eventually went back and played the NES version, and this is the same thing. I just thought it was really different with the way you managed your items, and you know the puzzles were different. I just thought it was something that was really unique for its time. And like
it
absolutely
was.
In the chapter, David Crane tells a great story about how when they handed in the ROM to like Nintendo, that like the people at Nintendo absolutely fell in love with it. Like it was one of their favorite games, like leading up to the release. So, I mean, that says a lot.
That does say a lot. That's wonderful. All right, let's see here. I have a crap load of questions here, and again, it's just not in any kind of particular order. So, but I did just get a message from the one and only Dan Ryan, who just started recording.
He just started recording.
And he should be joining us any minute now.
Cool.
In fact, I smell him.
Spider sense is tingling.
Good evening and welcome to episode 167 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of September 19th or 15th. I'm Chris Randazzo.
Test?
Wait, was I supposed to do that now? That joke is always funny. Every time I'm late, it's always funny. Hi, guys. I'm sorry. My kids' back-to-school night went really long. Really absurdly long. I left my house at 6 o'clock, and I can walk to the school. Patrick, how are you, sir?
Pretty good, man, but, I mean, I'd hate to be your kids right now. Like, a three-hour, you know... When I was a kid, if my parents were at, you know, a parent-teacher for 3 hours, I knew I was going to get, like, the kendo stick when they came home, you know?
No, see, there's two of them, and my kids go to a really good school, but because they go to a really good school, they're, like, really fucking proud of their shit.
Oh, man. Look at my macaroni pictures, Dad.
Yeah, it's like, God, all right.
We had back-to-school night, too, although it's not school, it's daycare, but they teach them stuff there, and the woman that runs my kid's class, so he's officially in pre-K, this woman is intense, like, seriously intense, and it's so hard to tell when she's joking and when she's not, because she talks to adults the same way she talks to the kids.
Oh, that's
like,
not good.
So she's got a couple of screws loose, and she'll do this weird, like, really intense eye contact with you and kind of smile like she's telling a joke. And I remember last year I kind of laughed at something and she gave me this look like that wasn't fucking funny. And I don't know how to read this woman. I have no idea, but she's great with the kids.
That's all that matters. If it makes you feel any better, Tiffany came out and told me to move my conversation that I was having with another dad about going to get some beers down the hall while the other teacher was starting because we were too loud in the hallway. So. Like, she just came out and shoved us down the hall.
That's the best thing about teaching college. Like, I don't have to do any of that stuff.
No, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Dan, why aren't you a college professor?
Because, Chris.
Good answer. Good answer.
Because
you can never have too many Ninja Turtle movie quotes.
You can never have too many Ninja Turtle quotes. So what questions did we hit so far? I came in right at the end of...
Patrick's just been talking about his book, and I had a couple of questions just naturally come up in conversation. And we were just, as you showed up, getting to the onslaught of ridiculous questions that are here. So why don't you go ahead and pick one, Dan?
All right, let me let me take a look here. All right. So yeah, no, actually this one I thought was actually a legitimately good question from the nonsense that we have here. In your book, the games that you picked.
Yes.
Why these games in particular? Like, was there some sort of thing where you were like, this is a watershed moment, things are different now, or was it just like I fucking like these games, so I'm going to talk about
it? It was a little bit of both. I felt like some of these games had to have been in the conversation. Like, I put To the Moon in the book because I feel like it's one of, like, the best RPGs of the past 10 years that nobody knows about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that game. Like, I cried like a bitch at the end of that game. Like, no exaggeration. Like, one of the only times I've ever cried in a video game is, like, I was, like, 13 and Sephiroth killed Aeris, and I was, like, that son of a bitch. But, To the Moon, the end of To the Moon, I was, like, wow, man. I was really touched. And, I interviewed, Ken Gao, like, when that game was originally released. And, he's my friend on Facebook. He's a really nice guy. And I'm like, you know what? Like, this guy deserves to be in the book. The same thing with, Pro Wrestling X. I mean, that game's been in development for 12 years. That guy started out, like, bitching about the state of wrestling games on the GameCube, and somebody called him out and was like, why don't you make your own game? And he was like, yo, I'll do it. So
I'll do it.
And he's a cool guy, too, so I figured he would get in there. I wanted a nice blend of, like, stories about developers making games for the love of the games, and then I wanted some bona fide superstar games like Mortal Kombat, NBA Jam. Also, Wasteland, I think, is a great game that a lot of people forget about, and I feel like there'd be no Fallout without Wasteland. Super Battle Tank is obviously not one of the best games of all time, and Gary Kitchen has made much better games, but there's a really cool story behind it that's in the book, so that's why I put that in there. It was just, I wanted to tell interesting stories. So I wanted to get some big-name games, but then I also wanted to get some interesting games. I mentioned before that one of the games, Mushroom 11, was designed by two married couples, and I thought that was really cool. And at one point, the wives went to work, and the husband stayed home to finish the game. And the money the wives were making was going towards finishing the game. I mean, that's just awesome. You know,
that's kind of really cool.
Yeah. So
did it ever come up in your conversation with Mark Turmel about WWF WrestleMania the arcade game, which I just profiled here on Why I Love Wrestling, which you can check out in the Why I Love Wrestling section here at geekade.com.
Nice.
Did anything ever come up in the conversation about why the fatalities were taken out? Because you can still see video of the Undertaker fatality.
We discussed some of that.
Okay.
What we really talked about was how the locomotion system was created for the game, like the walking to and from the ring, which was unique for the time. The motion capture process for all of the wrestlers, there was a lot of problems, like the Undertaker wouldn't work unless he had alcohol.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, and like Mr. Perfect was supposed to be in the game, and they paid to fly him out like 3 or 4 times, and he just never showed up.
Oh, that makes me so sad. I love Mr. Perfect.
And what happened was a lot of the wrestlers didn't want to do their moves for mocap. So what happened was Sal DiVita was like, you know what? He was grabbing like interns and like suplexing them and shit, and
without warning.
Yeah, without warning, basically. You know? And the wrestlers were like, "Yo, man, this guy actually knows what he's doing." So he kind of like motivated them. They had a lot of fun. Like that game was a lot of fun for them to develop, and the game was originally supposed to have indie wrestlers in it.
Okay.
And then they got the WWE license. So at first, it was supposed to be something that was like similar to Mortal Kombat, and it still has elements of Mortal Kombat in it, absolutely. But then they wanted to kind of have some wrestling stuff in there. They really felt that the famous wrestling games of that time, like WrestleFest and stuff, mm-hmm. weren't nearly as good as a lot of people gave them credit for, so they wanted to take it into a different direction. That's why it's basically a fighting game with wrestlers, you know? So
yeah, I think I compared it to if NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat made a wrestling game,
yeah.
It would be, and I'm not sure if it's the best wrestling game or absolutely the best wrestling game,
mm-hmm.
but I'm pretty sure it's the best fucking wrestling. Like, it's so ridiculous. It's just so over the top and silly.
I think it's a great wrestling arcade game for me. Like, the best wrestling games of all time are the Aki ones on Nintendo 64. That's, like, where my heart is.
Sure. I mean, if we're being technical, like Fire Pro and all that.
And Fire Pro, yeah. Fire Pro is up there, too. Like, I have Fire Pro and Super Nintendo. Like, that's my jam. But in terms of, yeah, arcade games. And, like, Turmel is so humble. Like, that game made a ton of money. And he's just like, yeah, it was, like, a fun little experience and blah, blah, blah. But again, it's a game that a lot of people forgot about. It sold over a million copies on the PlayStation. It was released on a ton of different systems. So it was a game that I feel like a lot of people have forgotten about. And a lot of people that are, you know, 17, 18 years old that are playing WWE 2K18, 17, 16, 15 and stuff, they don't even know right. these games exist, and they deserve to know. So that was one of the reasons why I featured that in the book.
That's awesome. That, I think, might be my favorite. Like, when Chris sent this out and I saw that on there, I was like, all right, this is sweet. We're going to have plenty to talk about. We're good.
Yeah, the story, be fine. The best part of that chapter is, like, the stories he gives us about, like, how they got the wrestlers to do the moves and, like, all the little, like, behind-the-scenes stuff that led to, like, certain wrestlers being included and certain wrestlers not being included. Like, that's what I feel is, like, the bread and butter of that chapter.
Very cool.
And a lot of the technology that they used in that game fueled, like, later games, which they discussed too in the chapter. So,
all right. Well, so this awesome. Is a this is a two-parter, and this is how it was written.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our writers wrote softball. What's the author's favorite video gaming memory? And then another writer responded, video game. What's the author's favorite softball memory? So, what is your favorite video gaming memory, and what is your favorite softball memory?
Okay, so my favorite video game memory, oh my god, this is great. My dad's going to kick my ass when I tell this story. But I own him, like own him in NHL 90, NHLPA 93, NHL 94, NHL 95 on the Sega Genesis. Own him, like you could handcuff me and I could play backwards and I could still beat him. And he would use Ronick and I would still destroy him. I could be the Ottawa Senators and still destroy him. So I remember one game I was just completely toying with him. And he was out to like a 6-0 lead, and in the third period with like 6 minutes left, I came back and I beat him like 9-6, and he was pissed.
That's awful.
He was pissed, and he had just like lost his job like a couple of weeks before. It was like a couple of weeks before Christmas, and he had just lost his job. I was like 10 years old, and I was rubbing
buying you presents and shit. Yes, you're kicking him while he's down.
I was rubbing it in his face, and he just looked at me. And my dad's like Bam Bam Bigelow. He's like 5'11", like 290 pounds, and he just looks me dead in the eyes, and he's got the Sega Genesis remote in his hand, and he just breaks it in two clean pieces. So we did not play that game ever again. So that's probably one of my favorite gaming moments. One other favorite gaming moment, if you Google it, it's actually, you can actually Google this. It's if you Google Patrick Hickey Jr. destroys 12-year-old in NHL, I'm playing my nephew in, like, NHL 15 or whatever, and I basically called, like, 3 goals in a row on him, and I'm just laughing in his face the entire time. I watch it, like, once a day. It's like an orgasm for me. So those,
you're not wrong, man. People need to be humbled.
Absolutely.
Especially kids. They need to be put in their fucking place.
They've got to know every single day. Like, they have to know that, like, you're better than them.
I did that to my niece in Smash Brothers. She was playing against my sister an awful lot, and she was winning, and she was starting to get really cocky about shit. And so I decided to whoop her ass in Smash Brothers, like, brutally and mercilessly. And she got kind of mad at me.
Nice.
It's how it has to be done, man. We used to do that shit to people working in the video game stores when they would come in talking shit about how good they were at Street Fighter.
Yep.
Like, oh, yeah, I've played that a little bit. Let's pop it in here. Let's just see how this goes.
Ass in Third Strike. Will you now?
Will you? You're like 10. Shut the fuck up.
I run like retro video game tournaments at this video game store in Brooklyn Video Games, and every month we have tournaments. So last year we had I called it the Dudley Boys Tag Team Classic, and it was a tag team tournament in No Mercy. And I did not get pinned. My tag team partner got pinned both times. It was double elimination. We came in second. So I was pretty pissed. So then the next tournament we had, I made it to like the semifinals, and I was fucking around with the guy that I should have beat, and he ended up beating me. And he was just talking shit the rest of the night. And it just got to the point where, like, I'm 6 foot four, I'm 315 pounds. So I put him in a lion tamer. I just wrapped him up, locked my arms, and I sat on his back. And he tapped, and I didn't hear it. So I just held it for a little while. And the guy didn't come back to the video game store for like 2 weeks. But I think the lesson was learned, you know? So.
All right. So, second part, what is your favorite softball memory?
Oh my God, this is another funny story that involves my father. I was like 11 years old, and like the entire neighborhood got together in Brooklyn, and like we had this big monster like softball game. It was like 11 kids to a team and stuff. Dads were playing and stuff. And I told you guys before, like my dad's built like Bam Bam Bigelow, and he's a left-handed like first baseman and stuff. He's like stocky Thurman Munson style and stuff. And he was hitting like home runs left and right. I was like super happy and stuff. But our team played like awful defense. So it was like bottom of the ninth, and it was like 27 to 26 or whatever. Bases loaded, two outs. And I was playing like left field or right field or whatever. And my dad's like, no, like switch, play third base. And I'm like, okay, all right. So first pitch, the guy hits a rocket like right down the line, and I pick it, and I throw to first base, and I got the guy out by like 4 feet, and it was like, holy shit, I'm Robin Ventura, baby. Like, oh my God. And like people were like picking me up. I felt like I just won the World Series. And like my dad had like 20 RBIs in that game, but I won the game, you know? So it's like, still to this day, I'm like, yeah, baby, like nobody else could have made that throw. Of course other people could have made that throw, but I did that day. So that's like my softball story. So I probably could have just tagged third base, though. Fucking idiot. The bases were loaded.
Could have gotten the easy force out, but now you got to go showing off.
Yep. So yeah, that's that.
Were there, was there anybody like that you wanted to interview that turned you down, or anybody that you just couldn't get for like scheduling or anything like that?
So this book was supposed to be originally like 15 to 20 games, like a coffee table book, you know?
Right.
And McFarlane was like, well, dude, you need at least 75,000 words. So you need, if you're aiming at like 2,500 to 3,000 words a chapter, you're going to need like more games. So by the time Christmas ran around, I had like 18. So I'm like, shit, I don't think I'm going to have enough. So I just sent out a ton more pitches, and that's when I got the developer of Spider-Man 2 for PlayStation 2, which, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest comic book games of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had gotten the creator of The Fireman for the Super Nintendo, and that's a fantastic game that a lot of people don't know about. But I also got Alan McNeil, who did Berserk. And that, I'm not sure if you guys know about that game, but, I mean, two people died playing that game competitively in the 80s.
I very much know about Berserk. I friggin' love that game.
Yeah, and what happened was Mr. McNeil agreed to the interview, and I sent him questions, and then I was going to do a phoner with him, and he said his mom is very sick and stuff. I hope she's okay. And he had just never gotten back to me. So 36, I ended up getting 36 developers, but I should have had 37.
I was just looking back in the email. I was like, did I miss Berserk? Like, what? Oh.
Yeah, I wanted Berserk in the game so bad. And also, too, like, the story for Doom, the way Doom got in the book was crazy, too, because it's Doom on the Game Boy Advance. And the reason why it's Doom on the Game Boy Advance is because that game was developed and it was about 90% finished when John Carmack found the Atari Jaguar ROM, like, in his attic. And this is, like, Doom on the Game Boy Advance came out in, like, 2003. So this is quite some time after. And he told David Palmer Productions, why don't you guys use the Jaguar ROM on the Game Boy Advance? And they were like, what? And they ended up having to, and they did. And what happened is Palmer believes that the version that they created is better. And but if you guys have played Doom on the Game Boy Advance...
I have. I bought that day one.
It's pretty good.
I love Doom. I absolutely love Doom. And especially the first two, I love those games to death. And when they announced that it was coming to Game Boy Advance and I could play Doom like on the toilet,
yeah,
I was blown away.
You and love the toilet, man. Magazines, games.
I do. It's my favorite time of day.
Absolutely. So,
but I was so impressed by Doom on GBA. I was so completely impressed. Same thing with Super Nintendo. I remember playing Doom on Super Nintendo and be like, wait, this works?
Mm-hmm.
How does this work? Like, it's sure, it's ugly, but it's functional.
Absolutely.
This shit, what witchcraft is this shit?
There's so much drama about the development and the creation of that game on Game Boy Advance that I felt like no one ever really knew. And the thing that's crazy too about it is David Palmer, one of the like the creator of David Palmer Productions, the guy that like published that developed the game. He's currently sick with cancer, and I sent him the questions, and he disappeared for like 3 months, and I didn't want to bust his chops. And my mom is currently fighting cancer, so it's like I kind of know like what's going on. And it was like 4 days before my manuscript was due, and my max word count was 100,000 words, and I had like 97,000. So I emailed him. It was like a Saturday afternoon, and I'm like, listen, I know you're going through all of this, and I'm like, I'm dealing with it with my mom, and it's not fun. I'm like, but I have 3,000 words left in this book, and I would love for them to be yours. So the next day, I get an email, and it's all the answers, and that's the last I've ever heard of him.
Hmm.
So it's like, I'm super happy that I was – I hope he's okay. I thank him so much because the chapter is great. And it's like I remember writing it. I was at an office meeting for my college, and I was literally falling asleep writing that chapter because I wanted to get it done in time to send in as a part of the manuscript. So, yeah.
Well, I also hope that he's okay. And I really look forward to reading that chapter because I didn't know there was a bunch of drama behind the GBA port of that game. That's awesome. That's the freaking Jaguar game.
Yeah. How does that happen? You know?
That's so weird. Oh, that's awesome. Who asked the last question? Was that me or
No, that
or
was me.
Dan?
Did I even answer your question? I'm sorry.
I think so. It's close enough. Oh, whatever.
Let's go with yes. I like that answer.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Let's see. Okay, Dean says, ask him what his feelings are about the Ouya, a.k.a. God's gift that man squandered.
Oh, my God. The best thing that ever happened to the Ouya, well, the best thing that came out of the Ouya is Towerfall. You know? So, I love Towerfall. I destroy my nephews in Towerfall all the time. It's like that. You're right. That's a system that had a lot of possibilities. Couch co-op, ton of indie possibilities.
Dean was a Kickstarter backer for it.
Yeah, and it just kind of like fell apart. What happened was I'm pretty sure I have an interview with them on my website reviewfix.com. I interviewed them. I interviewed the Play Jam people, the Game Stick or whatever. You know, like I was trying to help out all of those people and get like attention to it and stuff. And the thought of the Ouya was actually like really cool. I like the controller. I like that. My wife liked the fact that it was small and didn't take up a lot of space. Like, you know, so, but
it was pretty small. It was
yeah.
Tiny little,
but it just never happened. Thing. And that's what we discussed that in the book. Like the same thing we discussed, like the failure that is the Project Nemo. You guys familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
So, sounds familiar.
It's basically the Hasbro created system, the VHS.
Oh, that's system, right. Yep. Yep.
That Night Trap and Sewer Shark and all of those, all of those, you know, motion
FMV
video
games.
Yeah, we're supposed to come out on. And this is the thing too. That's the reason why Night Trap is in the book. Like, I want you guys to think about this for a second. Like, Super Mario Brothers came out in 1985. Okay, Night Trap was originally supposed to come out in like 1986 or 1987. So if that game comes out in 1986 or 1987. It, like, changes the video game industry in a very big way, you know? Like, super hot chicks, like, and futuristic vampires and stuff like that. Like, on your TV, that could have been really cool. But in 1992 and 1993, it's like, what the fuck is this? You know? So, it's like, so many people trash Night Trap, and I feel like Rob Phillip, like, come on, the guy programmed Missile Command on the Atari 2600, which is a fucking masterpiece.
It is,
and like,
it's awesome.
Demon
One of
Attack.
My favorite 2600 games.
Yeah, and it's like, what? His girlfriend actually left him after Night Trap came out because it got so much negative attention.
Oh, poor guy. It's not that bad a game.
Poor guy. That's the thing. I'm of the camp of, I tried Night Trap. I really did. I own it on 30. Was it Sega CD and Sega CD 32X versions? At least just the two. I don't get that game. I don't get the draw of that game at all. I never have.
But you are also not a man who enjoys like 80s slasher flicks either, right, Chris? Like,
that is
you're not,
true. So
you're not into like
I am not
Freddy
the audience
Jason
for that game. Yeah,
it's just not for you. But like, yeah. If you were a fan of those games, there's a very similar vibe in there. There's a very similar aesthetic in there.
Yeah, I
and
guess
like you're
I get
right.
That.
If that comes out in 87. That's the biggest thing of all time.
Well, see, I remember feeling that way about Dragon's Lair. Looking at Dragon's Lair like, oh my god, I'm playing a cartoon. And even if the interaction is relatively minimal, it's like, this is a video game that is literally a cartoon. This is crazy to me that I can look at something that looks like this and then look at something that looks like Asteroids. But, yeah, I guess I didn't really think of it from that perspective. If I was a fan of that genre, that I probably would have felt differently.
One of the reasons, too, like, are you guys familiar with Five Nights at Freddy's?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
It steals so many gameplay elements from Night Trap. You know, the switching of the cameras and stuff like that. It's like, it's kind of like Night Trap Lite in a way, you know? So, I don't
know. It's because of Five Nights at Freddy's, just, and we're trademarking this idea now in case somebody runs with it in the future. But my one of my daughters has decided that when she's old enough, she is going to create a Chuck E. Cheese-style thing with animatronics and the whole thing. She designed all the animatronics she wants to put in there. And during the day, it's going to be like Chuck E. Cheese, and at night, the animatronics are going to get off the stage, and it's going to be like escape rooms.
I love it. That's great.
Which
I
is the it. Best fucking idea ever. It's
you
such
have,
a good idea.
You have
idea.
To call it Five Night Traps at Freddy's.
Five Night Traps at Freddy's. I like it.
Oh, man. That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, we're big Five Nights at Freddy's fans here. We've got book bags and stuffies and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan, your turn.
Oh, shit. I wasn't prepared.
Well, damn it.
I know. I'm sorry.
Let's each ask one more question because it's starting to get a tad late.
Okay, well I'm going to ask the serious questions then, and like it's kind of a bullshit question, and I apologize for that, because like there's really no easy answer for it, but like you can even go to top five, but like top five favorite games.
Ugh.
Right. See, I know it's a bullshit question.
No, it's
I know, but people like to know.
All right, so oh, I'm going to get so much heat for this, but who cares? Pokemon Red, and I tried to include it in the book, and I emailed Nintendo, and I sent them the sexiest pitch ever, and they sent me a PDF back with like 30 pages of awesome information, a lot of stuff that I didn't even know about Pokemon, so for them to even answer me was cool. I mean, I've been featured in a lot of like their promotional campaigns over the years for like reviews that I've done, so I have a good relationship with them. But I felt like for them to even answer me was cool. And if this was a different book that I didn't need direct quotations, I probably could have included Pokemon just from the information that they gave me. But I needed direct interviews, you know? So,
right.
All right, so Pokemon, NHL PA 93 or NHL 94, one of those two. NBA Jam, because I think it's probably the most perfect arcade game ever. It made $1 billion in its first year in the arcades. Final Fantasy VII, just because, I mean, if it's not in the list, then it's a shitty list. And and I would say maybe, like, Diablo or, like, Bard's Tale, one of those two.
No shit. See, the other ones are like, interesting answers. Bard's Tale or Diablo, those aren't ones you hear very often.
I just love both of those games. Like, I remember when my daughter was born, the video game store that I run the tournaments at, the guy's awesome. And whenever he gets something, like, really cool, he'll hold on to it and see if I want it. Because, like, I have over 2,000 games. I have over 30 consoles and stuff like that. And he sent me the baby was literally born, like, 8 hours ago. And he sends me a picture and he's like, boom, complete inbox, mint Bard's Tale for the NES. And I'm like, if it was on the PC, I would have ran. But I'm like, you know what? I still want it. So I remember when my baby came home like 3 days later, I went there and I picked it up because it's like it's one of my favorite games of all time. And then every time I look at it, I could be like, that's the first game I bought after my daughter was born. So
that's very cool.
So, yeah.
Nice. All right. If you could speak for the first time to any video game developer, inventor, personality, living or dead, who would it be?
It's kind of like why I love talking to Leonard Herman. I think because I think he's a genius, and I think he's Phoenix is one of the, if not the most influential piece of video game writing that's out there. I remember the first time I met him. I actually met him for the first time like a month ago at the ColecoVision thing, and I was like, "Tell me about like Ralph Baer," you know. So it's like
I love listening to him talk about Ralph Baer.
Yeah, I think we asked him the same question when we had him on. Yeah. Like, so I know we're interviewing you, but tell me about this other dude.
Yeah, so it's like that. That would be that's one of them, and like the I already did that, so like that's technically not my answer. So I got to do that. That was like one of the great things about the book because I got to speak to some of my favorite developers of all time. Like Mark Turmel was sending me video of his 2-year-old after my daughter was born, and he's like, "This is what you're going to have to deal with in like 2 years." And Mike Scupa, who did Bully for the PS2, which is a great game, and he did Sleeping Dogs for PS4, which is another game that I really like. He sent me the answers to my questions when my wife was in labor, and I was like messaging him on Facebook while my wife was in labor. I'm like, "Dude, thank you so much for the answers." And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Oh shit, I can't talk. My wife's like pushing a kid out, you know." So it was like that was one of like the really cool parts. Like I said, Nintendo never got back to me on Pokemon. That would probably be one of them. I got to interview Michael Brook for the NHL series. Like, he's the godfather. Like, "You're talking to me like I'm the godfather." Like, of the, you know? I know I just combined De Niro and Brando, but just go with it.
It's all right.
You know, of the NHL series. Like I said, the game that, like, broke my father's heart into two separate Genesis pieces. You know? So, that's a super tough question. But it would probably be the creator of Pokemon. Because everybody else, like, I really got for this book, as far as, like, the games that I played as a kid.
Wow, nice. All right, well, then we have to end on the question that we ask every one of our interviews. And it is a serious, serious question.
Uh-huh.
What bread is the best bread?
Jewish rye. I'm German. So it's like I have fond memories of my grandfather came to this country after World War II. He was a fighter pilot in the German army. He flew a Stuka, and he came to Germany because he was in love with a girl that was born in the Bronx and used to come to Germany on vacation during the summer because her grandparents lived in Germany. And he knew no English and came to the United States, and he would watch John Wayne films while my grandmother worked in a bakery to, like, support them when he first got here. And it was a great man, tough as nails, German accent, sounded like John Wayne, but he made an awesome, like, kibasa and, like, hot mustard sandwich on Jewish rye bread at, like, 2:00 in the morning that I used to eat at, like, 8 years old with him, and we'd get yelled at. You know, so Jewish rye, some kielbasa and hot mustard and sauerkraut. That's some good stuff right there.
Oh my God, that sounds so good. Wow, that may be the hungriest anyone's ever made me when answering that question.
So when you say Jewish rye, people are like, why? So I had to explain. Because, like, when you put it in that context, it's sexy as hell. Now, like, now I want it.
As soon as you said Jewish rye, I was just like, fuck, that's a good answer. Because, like,
there's some good sandwiches on Jewish rye.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, you want to put a nice pastrami sandwich on some... Oh, God.
Wow, this just got so fucking localized to the Northeast. Like, every listener we have that does not live in New York or New Jersey is like, what the fuck?
You have no idea
what these guys are talking about. Yes. Are they talking about submarine sandwiches? Why?
Do they have Jewish riot blimpies?
There's actually still a Blimpies in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. It's just, like, shocking. Because you can't find them anywhere in like, New York City anymore.
They're definitely in North Jersey. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a bunch of them when I was living
7-Elevens.
Up there.
7-Elevens. Like a combination 7-Eleven Blimpy.
And Wawa's.
Oh, fuck yeah, Wawa.
Wawa is awesome.
Wawa is awesome.
Dude, you don't
even know. I'm in South Jersey, so, like, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Wawa. Like, you can stand outside of a Wawa and see another Wawa.
I lived in Texas and Florida for almost 10 years, and there were no Wawas down there, and it was fucking awful. There was a Schlotsky's, which is a good sandwich shop, but it's not fucking Wawa. It's just not. It's just not a thing anybody else understands. Unless you know, you don't know.
It's like, Dan, why are you in such a bad mood? Because there's no fucking Wawa's. That's
no
why.
No fucking Wawa. I can't get a pretzel that's got some shit in it. I can't get any fucking tasty cakes. I can't get a turkey bowl. This is bullshit.
Oh my God.
Sucks.
Hot turkey is coming back soon. We're almost in hot turkey
soon,
sandwich
Chris,
season at Wawa.
I had one last night for dinner.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I haven't been in Wawa in like 2 days. I need to check and see if my Wawa's have them.
Coffee's a buck. Coffee's a buck and there's hot turkey bowls.
Drink coffee.
What are you doing?
Karen drinks coffee. Karen drinks coffee for the both of us. Well, Patrick, thank you very much for coming on. Give us your last-minute pitch. Tell people where they can go to find your stuff and do the things.
So the book is currently available for pre-order on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, on McFarlandBooks.com, and it's available, ironically, I found through several Google searches, in several bookstores in the UK and even one in Sweden.
Ooh.
That's cool.
So I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, also, we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/ The Minds Behind the Game. So, we're currently running a tournament to crown the best game in the book. So, every day we have a different matchup. We're only like 6 or 7 matchups in. So, if you guys want to just jump onto the Facebook page, give it a like and follow along. We're going to have raffles, too. I gave away a copy of Chris Jericho's new book last week. I've given away copies of some of the games featured in the book over the past couple of weeks, so it's fun. It's a fun Facebook page to follow and chill out on.
Cool, man. All right, well, that's our show. Join us next week when Dan and I will be talking about Metroid Samus Returns, what we think of it, how it compares to AM2R and the original Metroid 2, and more. I am extremely excited about this. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS. Dan is available at
Geekade Dan.
And Patrick, are you on Twitter?
Yes, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. I'm at @ReviewFix.
All right, there you go. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to, again, in the show notes. One more time, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com, where we post something new every single day, and we've done it so far this month every single day,
even though I missed last week.
It's all right, we had it covered.
Chris, I don't know what happened.
I will say this, we were talking about people sending us stuff. We just got an email from a gentleman named Bobby Edod, I think is how you say it. And it was a wonderful email. I really, really appreciated it. I'm going to forward it to Dan. We just got it a little bit before the show tonight. And so thank you, Bobby, for writing in and listening to us from Britain. Small B, because it's not great despite the name. His words, not mine.
Well, Brexit's a fucking shit show, so, you know. We'll talk about that next week. I have
thoughts. If you do... It'll be Metroid / Brexit coverage.
That seems about right for this show.
Seriously, though, anytime somebody sends us an email or a comment, we do read it, and we do really honestly appreciate it. So thank you again for that. Thank you again, Patrick, for joining us. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.